So they miss being here, though. They had to be on a Zoom in California. So last week we talked about how Shlomo, since it wasn't a genie, it was only Hashem, he only got one request, he didn't get three. So he asked for this Lev Shomea, this discerning heart. God is very happy about this. So God says, okay, I only gave you one wish, but I'll grant you three. So he gets the Lev Shomea, and he gets Osher and Kavod. And we noted that it's actually a bit of a double-edged sword. We'll be talking about swords tonight. And the double-edged sword is, of course, the idea of corruptibility. And that is going to be a major challenge. And that's part of this dynamic is, you know, how much of this gift is really a gift and how much is, you know, is really a curse. Good to see you, sister. Sister is here. So, you know, that's going to be an issue. So the story that we have tonight is the famed story. The famed story of so-called Solomonic wisdom, the splitting the baby. And I'm happy to present tonight an approach which is really found in the Malbim, the Mitzvot David, but I actually heard it from my teacher of Yitzchak Tursky many, many, many years ago. I heard it from him directly, and you see that this is absolutely the truth of the story, but not fully understood. So, you know, we're going to do this a little bit differently than we typically do it, because I know this is probably the best-known chapter in all of Sefer Melachim. So let's just say it, you know, the way that we all grow up hearing this story, and then we'll take a look at the Psukim and we'll see what's real and what's not. So, of course, there are the two women. We'll talk about this in detail, right? And they're both claiming to be the mother of this baby. And how does Shlomo figure out who the mother of the baby is? What do we all grow up learning? What does he do? Sister?
He says, let's the baby.
And right.
How the moms react.
Right. So the mother, the real mother says, no, don't split the baby. And the fake mother says, yeah, split the baby. So you see, the real mother is the one who's not the sociopath. Okay. So that's the story that we grew up hearing. So it makes you wonder. I remember when the story was explained to me that way, I was thinking like, wow, this fake mother is not too bright. Like, it's a dead giveaway. You know, it's like, if you want to really prove you're not the mother, so say split the baby. It's like, I was in third grade. I was thinking to myself, like, wow, everybody thinks Shlomo's so smart, but maybe she's just really not smart. Like, this was like very strange to me. Like, I knew that couldn't really be the story. I believe that Shlomo was very smart, but I didn't believe that that was why he was very smart. So you can imagine my relief when the story was actually explained correctly to me. So we'll talk about what really happened, but there's actually a lot that happens in the story. And in many respects, it sort of captures all of the complexity of Shlomo that we've talked about so far. So, you know, I think one of the things that's like really interesting to think about as we just as we prepare to look at the text of this story is why it has been so misinterpreted. Like, even on its face, like the way that we just went over the story, like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, why has this story become so misconstrued over time? Like, you know, he takes a Shlomo, the wisest of all men, like, you know, oh my God, you know, he figured out the one who said, don't split the baby, that's got to be the real mother, because a real mother wouldn't actually split her baby in half. Like, that, like, who? It's childish. Like, who could actually believe? But there's kind of, I think, like a story within the story. So hopefully we'll be able to pin down exactly what the, you know, what the story is really about, and how this is the Lev Shomea that we were talking about. But it's also more than that. It has to do with Shlomo's like relationship with the Jewish people. So here we go. Let me share my screen. Okay, fantastic. So Az, the Radak points out Az, meaning as an expression, like as a manifestation of the divine gift of wisdom, Tavonas Shtayim Nashim Zonos El HaMelech V'Tamod L'Fanav. Okay, so I will make two observations. One of them is that in this entire section of the chapter, the name Shlomo does not appear. It is only the Melech. Okay, that I think is important. Two is, again, this was omitted in the third grade version. I'm not blaming anybody. So it's not just two women, but who comes to Shlomo? Yes. Right. As tavona shtayim nashim zonot el hamelach v'atamodna lefanav. Okay. So that is a very important detail. Now, why do I say that's an important detail? And again, understandably, not included in the third grade version of the story, right? I don't remember them saying, you know, when one was, an interior designer and the other one was, an obstetrician, but, you know, they were not described the way that they're described in the Navi. But obviously it's important. Why is it important? And what difference does it make?
He doesn't care who he's judging all the people, anybody.
Okay. This is my subtitle here, Justice for All, right? Like, you know, so this is significant, right? The test of any system of justice is its capacity to provide justice for all rungs of society. So this is actually an important indication that even Nashim Zonot felt comfortable coming to Shlomo for justice. I think that's consequential. That's a good sign. But it also has something to do with the story. What might it have to do with the story? I think this is part of the reason the story has been so misunderstood.
Fathers are unknown.
Right. So again, so it would have been easier to say in this situation, you know, to sort of dismiss the maternal, right, connection. Say, you know, you don't know what the provenance of this child is, right? Both of you. Okay, but that was not Shlomo's reaction. That I think is also consequential. Okay, so Vatomar Isha Achas Bi Adoni. So she appeals to Shlomo. Ani v'aisha zos yoshvos v'bayis echad. We were, you know, in this one room. V'aileidi ma b'bayis, and we both, you know, had children. V'hi b'yom ha'shlishi l'liti. V'atilid gam isha hazos. So I gave birth. 3 days later, she gives birth. V'anachnu yachda v'in zaritana b'bayis. Zulas yishtayim anachnu b'bayis. It's just us. So there's no third parties. There's no possibility that, you know, these babies come from anybody else. Okay, fine. Vayamus ben Haisha zos laila sher shachva alav. Right, so this woman accidentally suffocates her child. This is the story that's being told. Vatakom besocha laila, and she got up in the middle of the night after crushing her child. Vatikachas beni metzli, she takes my child. Vamascha yeshena, and I was sleeping, so, you know, I didn't notice. Vatashkiveu becheka, and she takes my living child. Zerbes beno hames, hishkiva becheki. Right, and so she replaces the child with the dead child. Okay, va'akumba boker lehinikas b'ni, I get up in the morning to nurse my child. V'hine meis, it's dead. V'espone nilav b'boker, and I'm looking carefully. V'hine lo haya v'ni asher la yalati. It's clearly not my child. Okay, so this is the story. I'm going to pause right here. Is this a credible story on its face? And again, like, you know, we all grow up hearing, like, oh, it was, you know, impossible to figure out who's telling the truth. Who could know but Shlomo? What an amazing idea he came up with. Does this story sound plausible? Just on its face. Like, what are the chances, if you had to give, like, a percentage, like, that this story could be true? Okay, my mother's shaking her head. Mom, let's hear it from a mom.
7.5%.
Not a high number. It's what the rabbis would call a miyacheno matzoi, under 10%. Yeah. It's far-fetched. It's possible if it were two dads. Maybe. But two moms? Does this make any sense? Did she just slept through the whole thing?
Why not just give it the benefit of the doubt, like we have for so many other narratives from Flemish Tanakh, you know?
Sam, if you told me that you were going to replace Tom Brady as the quarterback of the Buccaneers, I would give you the benefit of the doubt. I've got no issue with that.
There's an opening now, so who knows?
That's what I'm saying. I'd give you the benefit of the doubt. I'd say it's fine with me. But I have no reason not to believe you. But this whole story doesn't make any sense. You're telling me that this woman, she's saying what happened is, right, is that this woman crushes her child accidentally, you know. Now the pediatricians will tell you it's not a good idea to sleep with the child in the bed. Okay, nobody listens to that, but they do tell you. So she's claiming that she was just sleeping and somebody came and took her living child, replaced it with a dead child, and she wakes up in the morning to nurse her child and she first notices. It seems completely implausible. It actually seems absurd to me that a parent would sleep through that. Remember, we're all taught this story as if, like, you know, this required some, like, you know, absolute genius to figure out that, you know, this woman's not telling the truth. The story on its face strikes me. My mother gave it a 7.5% chance, which I thought was frankly a little generous. Nechama, an experienced mother. Would anybody believe this? It seems you're going to grab a mother's baby out of her hand, replace it with another baby, and she'll figure out in the morning? The whole thing, it's just very strange. Very strange. Another strange part of the story, I have to say, is so she's claiming that she slept through the whole incident, right? And she wakes up in the morning, and oh my God, it's not really her child. It's the dead child. So that's curious, because what does she claim happened? While she was so fast asleep that somebody could take her baby and replace it with a different baby.
That assumes that the baby is sleeping with the mother. Did she say that specifically?
Well, she said, "Vatashkivei v'cheka." You know, she put the baby into my arms.
The first mother crushed the baby. The baby was with her. Did the second one say, "My baby was sleeping with me"?
Yeah, she says she takes the baby from me and then puts the other one in my arms.
Okay.
But
they didn't believe in scripts or anything then.
Well, okay, but Effie, picking up on one of the details. So this mother claims to have been so fast asleep that this thing could have happened. But what's the elameata here? Little Talmudic riposte. What's not credible about this? She was so fast asleep that somebody could actually take a baby out of her arms and replace it with a dead baby. But if she was so fast asleep, then how would she?
She's not saying that she knows. She said she didn't recognize the baby in the morning.
But how would she know that this woman crushed her baby?
Okay. Okay. Now you got me. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not saying like I'm Sherlock Holmes over here, but this story just doesn't seem to make too much sense. Okay.
If she was awake enough to know the woman crushed her baby, why didn't she help out when the baby? No, never mind. The baby wouldn't have been doing anything, not breathing.
So, you know, it's a strange story. It's clearly a made-up story. Okay. So the real question is, what's the story about? Okay, so in any event, so Vatomer Aisha Acharis, the other woman just says, Lo, ki b'ni hachayu b'nei chameis. She just says, no, she doesn't argue the details. The whole thing is a fabrication. She says, my child is alive, and your child is dead. Vizosomeres, and the other one says, lo, ki b'nei chames, yours is the dead child, v'ni hachai, and mine is the living child, v'atidaber na lifnei hamelach, and they went on speaking in front of the king. V'yomer hamelach, so the king says, notice he's not Shlomo in this chapter, Zosomeres, zebni achai, uv'nei chames, this one says that mine is the living child, and yours is the dead child, v'zosomeres, lo, ki b'nei chames, the first woman to speak, the woman with the story, says, no, yours is the dead child, uv'ni hachai, and mine is the living child. Okay. So now here comes the part that everybody, knows about. So, vayomer melech kechuli charev, it says, take a sword. Vayaviu acharev lifnei melech. So they bring the sword. They actually bring the sword. It's kind of dramatic. Vayomer melech gizru es hayalad achai lishnayim, tistenu es achatzila achas, v'esachatzila achas. Okay? So he says, all right, split the baby. Right, the same language as Yosef and Binyamin. Right, so the actual mother says, of course, don't split the child. So this crazy lady says, oh, split the baby. Vayana melech vayomer, tenula sayalud achai. He imo. So Shlomo figures it out. This must be the real mother. Okay. Alright. And everybody's amazed. And everybody says the wisdom of God is with him. And, the people are in awe of Shlomo. So, what's it all about? How did Shlomo really know who the mother was? We read this pasuk again. Vayomer hamelech, zosomeres, zebini hachai, uvenei chames. The one woman says, my child is living and yours is dead. Vizosomeres, and the other one says, lo, ki b'nei chames, yours is the dead child, uv'ni hechai. And the Malbim points this out, the Mitzvot David points this out, Ritorsky pointed it out to me. What is the point of the story? How did he know? The sword thing is just a way of, proving the point. But how did Shlomo know? I mean, of course, the story on its face is absurd, but he's trying to make a point, a very serious point. But the story makes no sense. My mother was generous. She gave it 7.5%. Of course, this woman isn't telling the truth. But the king wants everybody to understand that there's a difference between these two women. What's the difference? One more time. Vayomer hamelech, zosomeres, zebini hachai uvenei chames, vezosomeres, lo, ki b'nei chames uvenei hachai. What's the difference?
In psychiatry, it's called making an I statement, right? She says, my child's alive. Her focus is on her child. She's talking first about her child. My child's alive. The other one talks first about, no, Her kid is dead.
Right, because what's her orientation, the second lady's?
Just taking it away from the other one.
Right, she's suffering, so she doesn't want the other one to have it. Yeah, that's what the story is about. That was the wisdom of Shlomo. The sword thing is just a way of helping everybody else catch up. But the story is about listening. Right? Again, this is, this is significant because that's what Shlomo had davened for, right? Alev Shomea, the capacity to listen to people. If you just listen to people, you'll see that there's a difference between saying B'nei Chai or B'nei Chmeis and saying B'nei Chmeis or B'nei Chai. Seems like it's the same, but it's actually profoundly different. Just I'll read it inside in the Malbim, but it's clear my father said it. Uklab Lashon Sha'adam Yakbi Tamid Mashu Ikar V'yachar Esat Hafel. A person will always speak in terms of what's really important, The woman who said, my child is alive, she was trying to say, my child is alive. Right, and I'm about to lose my child. V'amakdemes b'loshona b'nei chameis ikar megamasa she'ameis ben chaverta lo she'achai b'na. She didn't. Her child was already dead. So her, you know, basic orientation in this world is misery loves company. Right. So it's just Shlomo was proving that using the sword. Okay, very good. So now we of course understand what the story is really about. It's not like this childlike story about how Shlomo, you know, took out a sword and the real. He knew that was just a proof. The point is about what it means to listen to people. Okay, so now obviously any sane person, I would think, would realize that the woman who is telling this story about being so fast asleep is to have her baby taken away from her, but it's at the same time somehow being awake enough to realize that the other baby was crushed. None of that makes any sense. But Shlomo is trying to point out, you know, justice can be found through listening. It's interesting, when Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to the Dayanim in Sefer Dvarim, the word that he uses time and again is the word Shamoa. Shamoa ben achicham u'shvat tem tzedek ben ishu ben achiv ben gero kakaton kagadol tishma'un davar esher yiksha mikem takrivun elai u'shmativ. Okay, so that's like what I learned from Rabbi Twersky. I think it's very important. Like I said, the Malbim had it first, and it's Mitzutas David as well, that what was impressive to people was Shlomo's capacity to listen. And I think that matters very much. But I think that there's a whole second part of the story that I only realized over the course of the last week. You know, it could have been that God could have arranged for Shlomo's wisdom to become manifest through any particular case. What is the significance of this story with respect to Shlomo? Why this story of all stories? It's a story about two babies. One is living and one is dead. Shlomo is able to discern who the real mother is by listening carefully and seeing, you know, how they formulate things. Why isn't it a story about two goats? Why isn't it a story about two fields? Why is it in a story about, two pairs of overalls? Yeah, Mom, go ahead.
I'm assuming the baby is an allegory. And a baby is a cherished item. It's not a goat. Something was so perverse, I guess, that it was splitting the baby apart. If the baby is B'nai Yisrael or, you know, Shlomo came to be after a lot of divisiveness in the kingdom and one brother outdoing the other brother and trying to steal the kingship. And, you know, I guess Shlomo was the survivor, but it was at the point of creating a fissure in the baby.
I think you're getting close here at the end. Something you said at the end is picking up on the story. What's the story?
Different forces want to tear the entity apart.
Let's go back to Shlomo's origins.
If you go way back, I don't know if this was too far back, but with Bathsheba. So first of all, she was someone else's wife. So it wasn't fully belonging initially to David. But then also I was thinking how their first son, right, doesn't make it, dies. I don't know if that's significant or not. And then Shlomo, obviously, from this union ends up becoming the king. But so there's, you know, some stuff going on there.
You hit the nail on the head, Ruthie, as usual. The living child and the dead child. The living child in this story, right, is exchanged for the dead child. And the question is what is the viability now of the living child? Right, who's Shlomo? Shlomo is the living child that replaced the dead child from the sin of David and Bathsheba. He's the Yaled HaChai. And the question of Shlomo's monarchy is the viability of the Yaled HaChai. That's the story behind the story. Every surviving child grows up in the shadow of the ghost of the deceased child. Shlomo, the first fact of his life was he knew he was the child that survived. The previous child died. Right? We remember all of Bathsheba's intensity at the beginning of Sefer Melachim, right? About losing the living child. Adoniyahu is going to come and kill the surviving child. So Shlomo was able to listen to this story and immediately recognize, right, the dynamics of the story. Now, of course, his mother is like a queen, you know, and these women are zonot, but that's the point of this story, is justice for all. Right? Just like Bathsheba, who's a royal person, doesn't want the surviving child to be lost, so this Isha Zonah is still a mother. This is justice. When the queen and the Zonah can receive the same justice. Shlomo is the Yaled HaChai. He's the Yaled HaChai who was almost killed. Again, I'm not, you know, my feelings on his killing Adoniyahu. I think it's a complicated story. I don't know that was the right thing to do. I'm not sure that Bathsheba supported that. But the point is, this is, as Ruthie correctly pointed out, the real depth of this story is Shlomo's capacity to empathize. You didn't have to be Shlomo HaMelech to figure out who was telling the truth. Like I said, I thought my mother was being generous at 7.5%. The story is so absurd on its face, you know, that it's hard to, you know, just But I don't think that was ever in doubt. I think there are two points. One of them, again, is this, the point that we read from the Malbim that my father noticed is what is this orientation of each person. So that was Shlomo's insight. I think the deeper part of the story is the fact that there's a Yaled HaChai and there's a Yaled HaMeis. And the survival of the Yaled HaChai is threatened by the Yaled HaMeis. And Shlomo's viability is a precarious thing. And he can recognize the angst of the mother, even if she's not some royal figure, if she's just a Isha Zonah. But that's what justice is. Justice is kakaton kakadol tishmon, that everybody deserves fairness and empathy. And Isha Zonah doesn't love her her child any less than Bathsheba loved Shlomo. And so the Jewish people recognize in this verdict true justice. Okay, so now this becomes, I think, a critical point. Oh, yeah, Mom, go ahead.
Where else do we hear about a Zonah other than Rahab and these two women?
Well, the first example is Tamar, the biblical example.
It just, so the Rahab, you know, helped the spies escape through the wall or under the wall or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if this was some kind of payback.
You mean like to the...
A tribute.
Interesting. Yeah. So I think that what's important and what's impressive about these being Nashim Zonot is the idea that justice is for everybody. I'll add one point here. So if Shlomo is able to make an enormous impression on all of Klal Yisrael, but that's what it says, Vayishmu Chol Yisrael, that everybody heard, that, you know, this Isha Zonah, this mother, received justice. She was able to hold on to her child. The question is, can Shlomo stay true to that? Getting back to what we discussed last week, is the Osher and the Chavod, will that somehow sort of derail him or take him away from a concern for the humblest of all people? The simple humanity of a mother, even if she happens to be an Isha Zonah, will he continue to see that? Ruthie.
Two questions. Was it typical at this time for people to go to the king for judgment?
Right.
Settle dispute. Yeah, that's my question.
So that I think is so important. When it says, you know, as tavodna shnayim nashim zanot, or tavona v'tavod l'lifnei hamelach, the fact that they feel comfortable, the fact that they have access, is enormously important. Remember, that was Avshalom's claim against David, is that you've got no address. Nobody's interested in hearing what you have to say. And I think that Shlomo's accessibility is a new phenomenon.
But wasn't there a point that David was also known for kind of being fair to everybody of all different paths?
No question. Vayi David oseh mishpatut tzedakah l'chol amo. But as he aged, that seems to have faded. He seems to have receded. So this is critical. That Shlomo sort of like, if you will, opened up the gates of the palace to the Nashim Zonot. Take that as very significant. Yeah, Ruthie, you had a second, you had a follow-up question.
No, thank you. Okay.
Herb. Herb, I think you have to take yourself off mute.
I'm sorry. Taking up what Ruthie said, is that why Shlomo feels the need to demonstrate that he is accessible, he is available, and he is just in his decisions, to differentiate himself from the elder David?
It's possible. I mean, it's possible that he senses that this is the right thing. it's possible that he's also aware that this was kind of a point of attrition, you know, in terms of his father's functioning as the king. It's hard to say, you know, without speculating too much, to what extent this was just Shlomo, you know, acting in what he thought was an idealistic and appropriate fashion, and how much Shlomo is cognizant of how this really counted against David, how he lost the people when he withdrew from this figure of public justice. So, just to conclude where we began, the story as it's told is not the story. The story is not about a king who takes out a sword and threatens to split up a child and then is able to somehow figure out, oh, you see, that would not be so impressive. It is a story about listening. And I think even more importantly, it's a story about empathy. It's a story about Shlomo and a cognizance of the maternal attachment to a Yelet HaChai, especially when there's a Yelet HaMeis. And the vulnerability of that. And Shlomo, through his empathy, through his listening, is able to make an enormous impression on the Jewish people. And the promise and the potential of Shlomo is exactly that. Can he continue to deliver this kind of justice for all rungs of society? Mibechor paro hayoshev al kiso ad bechor hashivcha asher achar reichaim. That's the question. Right now, even the Nashim Zonot feel that they have an audience with the king. Even, frankly, a crazed woman, maybe crazed with grief, but who comes to the king and says outlandish things, even she can come to the king and say her outlandish things. I was awake when the child was crushed. I was so fast asleep when the child was replaced. Nonsense. But everybody can go to the king. He's a king for the people. Can he continue to be a king for the people? Can he continue to provide justice for all? The promise and the potential of Shlomo is so great. He's the Yeled HaChai, the surviving child, into naturally all of his mother's hopes and aspirations are placed, the ghost of the dead child, all of that. And we have to trace that arc now as we get deeper into his story. Now as we begin to understand this part of him and his psychology, the Yelet HaChai, the surviving child. That's the drama of this incredible story. Not a story about a sword and Solomonic wisdom. So we'll pick it up there next week with chapter 4.
Solomonic was his listening and deciphering who was the real mother. Because he heard absurd stories really from both of them. You know, even the real mother said, you know, take it from my arms and replace. How could, like, as you said, how could she sleep through all that? So
right.
Well, that Shlomo had to factor that in it too, right? That's kind of a little absurd. Hard to fathom.
Well, that was, right, that was the fake mother or whatever you want to call her, the mother of the dead child with her crazy story, but
the mother of the real child would be able to sleep through all that, you said.
Well, right. So this is what the the mother of the dead child makes the claim that that's what happened, but really she's just, you know, claiming a child that's not her own. So, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, you're right. I like the title better. Solomonic Listening, not Solomonic Wisdom. That's really what it should be called. Of course, there's a relationship there. Okay, so we'll hold it up there, and we'll pick it up next week, continue to journey deep into the story of Shlomo HaMelech.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.